Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I am Kate Spencer.
And I am Dori Shafrir.
And we are not experts.
We're not, but we're two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Look, if you've been here before, you know the drill. But if you are new here, friendly reminder that you can visit our website, forever35podcast.com, for links to everything we mention on the show. You can find us on Instagram at forever35podcast or join the Forever 35 Facebook group where the password is serums. We also curate some of our favorite products over at shopmy.us/forever35.
And we have a newsletter, forever35podcast.com/newsletter. And you can call or text us at 781-591-0390 and email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com. And my dear friend, Kate Horse Spencer.
Yes.
Is sick.
I have a cold. So, I mean, I as discussed, I voluntarily put myself on a floating petri dish for a week with my family in order to kind of, you know, I mean, it was a thing that we were aware of when my family decided as a unit to go on a cruise together, which again was a celebration of my father-in-law's 80th birthday 3 years after the fact. So I knew what I was getting into and I tried to keep myself as healthy and protected as possible, but I still got a cold. So here I am with a cold. I mean, it seems like I went to CVS last night to just pick up some extra NyQuil and the shelves were wiped out. I mean, wiped, you know, and I've had one kid who just had the flu. I have many, you know, many friends who've been dealing with flu, cold, RSV, COVID, obviously. I mean, it's just a really gnarly health season right now. You know, we see you if you're going through it. It's really scary. It's not fun, even, you know, it's not fun. It's scary. I don't like it. And I'm on DayQuil, but then I also bought myself a very cheap juicer. And I was like, I could get into drinking juice, like making my own juice, but it took a lot of work to make. Yeah, I made this like ginger, lemon, carrot, apple juice, which is quite tasty. And I like pumped it up with ginger for my sinuses or whatever. I mean, I don't know. I'm making that up. Does it help my sinuses? I don't know, Dori, but the juice is good. The juice is good. The juice is loose. You know, it's interesting though, just mentioning when I was on that boat, I walked on, there's like a track that circled this cruise ship, right? Like on the outside. So like you go around the track 2.5 times and that's like a mile. So I would go and walk in the mornings. It felt really nice and get some fresh air. But there was this signage on this walking path, and also like content warning. I'm going to be talking a little bit about like diet culture and eating and stuff right now. But there was this signage and it would be like just a couple more. I actually took a photo of it because I found it so fucking fucked up. But it was basically like just a few more steps and tonight's dessert will be guilt-free. Like this was, there were signs just hanging like, Yes.
No.
Yes. Intended to, quote, cheer you on. Like, it would be like, you know, come on, you've got it. And then there was this one that was so just Triggertown USA. I should have pulled this up before we started recording. My apologies. I am a little distracted with the stupid head cold, but I took a photo of it because I was like, you know, every morning, here it is, one lap to go, or maybe three, tonight's dessert can be guilt-free.
No.
I'm going to send you the photo so you know what, kind of how it worked, but it was like little signs above our heads. And I, you know, I feel like I've done enough work in this area on myself that I like can gray rock a lot of diet culture messaging. You know, like I don't, I'm able to protect myself.
Can you explain the term, gray rock for people who may not be familiar with it?
Yes. So the way I understand gray rocking is it's a practice to kind of protect yourself or deflect from like a narcissist or toxic person's energy. So if they're putting a lot of shit upon you, it's essentially kind of like disengaging, putting up like a protective wall, not reacting, not feeding back into it. So I think I've done a lot of work on this over the last few years, and I think I really have a lot of tools in place that allow me to do this. But I still was just like, Jesus, it was just a reminder of the like pervasiveness, like the way in which diet culture is so insidious. And I mean, I'm mentioning this too because we talk about it with today's guest, Yvette Dionne, who we'll get to later. And it's just something that's been on my mind. And this all coincided, Dory, with something I texted you about, which was that I found a blog I started 18 years ago about trying to lose weight that I didn't know
existed. How did you find this, and how are you looking for it? Like, what?
I was not looking for it. I received one of those emails that's like, happy 18th year anniversary from this blogging platform. And I was like,
oh,
what?
Oh my gosh.
So I wasn't looking for it. And I was like, oh, this will be funny to go read. Like, I thought it was a blog I had started that I knew about, like my main blog that I was writing 20 years ago. So I went over and I was like, this isn't me. Like the name of the blog was about getting skinny. Like I don't want to share it because I honestly don't. Yeah. It was so wild. Like I read it and I was like, I couldn't have written this. But then it was very clearly like, it was me. Like they hadn't made a mistake. It was me.
Wow. And you have no like real recollection of this.
No, I have recollections of wanting to lose weight and feeling bad about my body and shame, you know, trying the South Beach diet. I mean, all the shit that that all I remember, but I have no recollection of starting a weight loss blog, which I didn't keep for more than a few months.
But it wild.
It was shocking, and it was fat phobic and shaming, and I tried to read it with a lot of like empathy for my 25-year-old self.
Yeah.
Cause it was dark. It was dark. So, you know, this all kind of coincided. Like, I don't know. It's been on my mind, you know? It never goes away. It follows you. It's in you. You know, it's so systemic. It's like, the stuff is just, and then like, I'll have a moment where I'm like, oh shit, look what I'm doing right this very second. Like I'm doing all the things I thought I was not going to do anymore. So I don't know if anyone can like connect to this, but it just, wow. I don't know. It's just been on my brain. And you know what? I'm assuming podcast listeners, but other folks sent me this beautiful poem by this woman, Joy Sullivan, on Instagram called Horse Girl. And we'll link to it. And this poem, have you seen this poem?
I don't think so.
It like made me weep. it really got to me. I'm also texting this to you. So I'll share it, but it's here's the first line of the poem, and then you all can go click and read it. It says, it's called Horse Girl. It says, recently I discovered that for approximately the same amount I pay a fitness coach to tell me how many calories to eat monthly, I could lease a horse at a nearby farm and ride whenever I like. And it just goes on to talk about like what it means to kind of be free and be a horse girl, and just this, you know, this trap so many of us find ourselves in with this. So anyway, and you know, this is a conversation you and I have been having off the air too, just about the kind of constant, relentless weight loss messaging that still exists out there. And it's just a shitload.
It's a shitload. And it is sort of crazy to think about how we weren't aware of it for so long because it was just quote unquote normal for all this stuff to be everywhere. Like, I would bet you a lot of money that if you had gone on this cruise, say 15 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, and you saw those signs on the track, you wouldn't have thought twice about them. They would not have even pinged for you.
Well, and I think what bothers me so much is that, you know, my kids could walk on, are going to walk under, like my kids are already picking up on all this messaging. It's not gone.
Yeah.
You know, and like my daughter, my 12-year-old is like, why can't I be on, I don't have a phone. I want to be on Instagram. And I'm like, bitch, this is why, because I'm so fucked up. Like I'm trying yeah. to keep it away from you as long as possible, but it's already in them.
But you also can like give them the tools to interrogate diet culture in a way that our parents were not equipped to.
I think that's true. I think that's really true. I mean, God. But then I just wonder, and I think this has been addressed very, you know, people have addressed this kind of the way in which wellness culture is essentially just diet culture, right? How is it being packaged now so that we don't see it?
Well,
and again,
I mean,
people are interrogating
for,
more. Yes.
Spoiler for Yvette Dion's book, and we didn't actually talk about this in her interview, but she points out that like even Lizzo did a whole like cleanse at one point and like posted about it on her social media. And she claimed she wasn't doing it to, you know, lose weight, but she was still kind of subscribing to all of that wellness diet culture stuff. And so Yvette she didn't write about it to like shame Lizzo. She was writing about it more to be like, look, this shit is everywhere and no one is immune to it, even fucking Lizzo.
Yeah. I mean, but again, Dory, like I just bought this stupid juicer. Was there a weight? Was there some sort of fucking diet culture demon in my head when I bought it? I don't know. I don't think there was, but I really, truly, I just wanted to be able to make a juice. But in the past, I've had a juicer because I wanted to do juice cleanses because I thought that they would, quote, make me healthier, which was just me, a code word for me saying I want to lose weight. You know, this is some of the interrogation I have done.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So anyway, that's just what's been going on with me and my brain over here is like, you know, being like loving toward myself, knowing that I'm not immune from it, and knowing that I might participate and I might do or say things that I'm not proud of. I don't even know what the word is that I, you know, it's just in us, but to also be like constantly interrogating oneself, I think is helpful. So anyway, that's what's up with me over here. I didn't mean to go off so much, but it's like that the signage as I was walking was really just like, oh boy.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Shifting gears to you.
So, yes.
Because you have, you know, in our quest for understanding ourselves and what we need and what we want and figuring out how best to care and nurture ourselves and our inner children, you did something that you thought you wanted that then you decided maybe you didn't.
Yeah. So as discussed on a previous episode, I entered the lottery for the New York City Half Marathon. And I said to Kate, I think I have a pretty good chance of getting in because they do the lottery in like three buckets. One of them is New York, people who live in the New York metro area. One is people who live in the US, and then one is international. So I don't know how many people are in each bucket, but it seemed pretty clear to me that they want a geographically diverse group of people, probably to like encourage tourism dollars, right? Like, if you're coming in to run this half marathon from California, like, you're flying in, you're maybe getting a hotel, you're spending money in the same way that someone coming in from like Park Slope is not. Anyway,
there we go. Okay. So Dory
like,
had a plan.
I was like, I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get in. And then as like the weeks went by, and I was like, am I really going to do this half marathon? Like, it's a ton of training. I have to go to New York.
Like, right. Which is like money.
Which is money and time away. And then I found out that like Henry's preschool is doing this thing that weekend. Like, I was sort of 50-50 on going on anyway, but like it just sort of seemed like another sign that like, you know what, this is maybe not the time. And so I said to Kate, I'm going to drop out of the drawing. And in my head, I had until November 30th to drop out. But in fact, the drawing was on November 30th, and you had like until basically the day before November. You had until November 29th to drop out. So I like log on to my dashboard on November 30th, and it's like pending drawing, and like you couldn't change anything. And I was like, oh shit. And so I tried to like change my credit card so maybe it wouldn't get charged because there had been an issue with whatever. But then I got in. Spoiler, I got in. It was like, congratulations, like, you're running the New York City Half Marathon. And I was like,
you were right.
Fart. And I said to Kate, you know, maybe there is a part of me that like didn't really want to drop out because like I could have dropped out at any time prior to November 30th. Like, why did I wait until the very last second? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, did I subconsciously do?
Did I subconsciously sabotage my dropping out of this half marathon? So now I'm in, and of course I don't have to run, but I feel obligated because now I'm like, well, I took a spot away from someone else.
And you can't pass that bib onto somebody.
You can't pass it. I mean, I guess someone could run in my place, but I think like to pick up your, I think you have to like pick up a bib and like show ID. Like it's not as like straightforward. And you're not allowed to. Like, I could get banned from, you know, future races.
And we're talking about this so on my options podcast, so...
Like, and I'm talking about it on a podcast.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. Like, I'm not going to give my bib to someone else. So my options are either not do it or do it. And not doing it means just like, you know, abandoning it. So I was like, well, I guess, I don't know. I guess I can train for it. But like, you know, I was also like, this means like maybe giving up some tennis. This means like shifting some workouts. Like, I don't know. I looked up some half marathon training plans and, you know, I have not really been running. So like week one of this 12-week training plan, and the half marathon is March 19th. So from today, I have about 14 weeks. And you know, this 12-week training plan, you're supposed to be able to run 4 miles that first week. And I was like, I don't think I can run 4 miles. So I looked up a 10K training plan and I tacked on three additional weeks to the 12-week half marathon training plan to kind of like ease myself into it. So yesterday I did a 2-mile run and I was like, oh God. Like, a 2-mile run was hard.
Oh, Dory.
And I was just like, oh, I am so fucked. I am so fucked. What have I done? So I don't know, Kate. I don't know if I can pull this off.
Can I ask a question?
But that's where I'm at right now. Yes.
What's the training program that you're doing?
Hal Higdon.
Have you looked at Jeff Galloway?
I have not.
So
I used to use Hal Higdon when I used to run half marathons and train for a marathon.
So you feel safe. You
know, honestly, it felt safe. Also, I looked at a couple others, like Running World, like they're all kind of the same.
Yeah.
The calendars are all kind of the same. There's not like huge differences in, I'm doing the novice training plan.
Good work.
You know, if you're like a half marathon expert, there's a different training plan for you. But
yes,
if you're just like me, spontaneously deciding to run a half marathon after like 10 years. I mean, I think the last half marathon I ran was probably 2013.
Well, I did just want to say, Jeff Galloway is known for his run walk program, which is mm-hmm. what I've been, which I signed up for a 5K. I'm either going to just walk it completely or run walk it. And that mm-hmm. might be a more manageable on your body or whatever, might feel a little bit better. Yeah. And he often has people who they end up PR, they end up moving faster with the walk breaks than just running.
Right.
Again, I'm not telling you do what you need to do for your body and your training, but I do, he has an app and I do like Jeff Galloway. I will just say.
I mean, I will look into it. Thank you for the rec. I'm just like, what have I done here?
Well, you know, I mean, maybe there is something like to be received from it. Like maybe there is an experience that you don't know that you need. Like, you know, there is something to be said for like sticking with it and just doing it and going into it with like no expectations. And, you know, your only goal really is to finish mm-hmm. however you do it. And even that, like, you don't even have to, you know? So,
yeah.
Or you don't do it. And you just say, well, I fucked up. I don't want to do it. I'm sorry. Bye.
Okay.
The other thing here. I will recommend is a book that I used for my half marathon training is Marathoning for Mortals. And they have run, walk, and walk, run programs also. And this is, I'm telling you this, but I'm also just telling anybody mm-hmm. this who's interested. Like I personally like a run and walk combination. It just feels better for me and I'm easier on my body. But so those are two that I like.
Okay. All right. Well,
here we go.
I'll keep everyone posted.
Dory's running a half marathon, maybe.
Oh boy. Okay.
Well, look, should we take a little break and then share our conversation with Yvette?
We should, but we should introduce her first.
Okay. Pardon me. I'll do that. Yvette Dion is our guest today. We had a fantastic conversation with her. She's a journalist, pop culture critic, and magazine editor who covers culture and politics through the lenses of race, gender, class, and size. Currently, she is the executive editor at Yes Media, where she leads Yes Magazine. She is the former editor-in-chief at Bitch Media. She's also the author of Lifting as We Climb, which was longlisted for a National Book Award and won a Coretta Scott King author honor. And her newest book, which is out December 6th, so I think right this very second, is called Weightless, Making Space for My Resilient Body and Soul. And it's so good. It's great. All the stuff started talking about, you are going to, Yvette just goes into it and so much more. I mean, so much more.
Yeah. All right. So we are going to take a short break and we'll be right back. Mm-hmm.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s. But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there, the overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click Get Started, and then use our code FOREVER35 at sign up, and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones, but I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough, enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college? When I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress.
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh, that sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With honey love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they manage to not sacrifice lift, all while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it. Yvette, welcome to Forever 35. We're so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah. So we like to start off by asking our guests if they have a self-care practice that they do regularly that, you know, that you, if you'd like to share.
I would love to. I'm big on self-care. I would say my biggest tip I'm a reader. I love to read books. I love physical books. Like, I have to go to the library and get a physical book. And so I set like an amount of time in my day just to read, because it's something that I care about, something that rejuvenates me, it energizes me. So I set aside 30 minutes no matter what, just to sit somewhere and read. Highly recommend.
Is that something that you like put in your calendar, or you just kind of are like, oh, I need to do this today? Just kind of wondering about the logistics of it.
I make it a part of my evening routine. So I'm a big fan of evening routine. Like, I have to wind down my brain and prepare myself to go to bed. Otherwise, my brain is just running and running and running. Mm-hmm. And so I made it a part of my evening routine of, I have to take a bath. And then after I get out of the bath, I get in the bed and I read. So it creates a routine for me. So when I go to sleep, like, I'm actually asleep and my brain is not 3 days from now.
Okay. Do you, we're like very invested in bedtime routines here.
So I've got like so many, I got to like, could talk about for an hour about your routines, but yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Dory.
No, I was just going to ask, do you do it at the same time every night?
I do. I have to. Okay. If I don't do it at the same time, it doesn't happen.
Okay. Now here's my question. Do you also have a morning routine? Do you have kind of a similar thing established on the wake up side? And what is
it? I do. And the reason why is because if I don't have a morning routine, I run right into work. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, why am I so tired? I'm exhausted. Why am I so tired? So I've set a morning routine. My dog really helps me with that, because of course he needs to go outside. But once he comes back in, like, I do a whole face routine and drink a cup of tea and get myself ready for the day. So I'm not jumping out of bed and right into the world.
Is this like a lifelong practice for you, or did you reach a point where you were like, I need to establish these routines for myself? And what was the kind of practice there? Because I asked this selfishly, because this is something that an intention I set for myself last week. But it's the implementing the practice that I find really hard. So I would love to know what your experience has been kind of getting this to work for you.
I was so burned out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm navigating like very, what my therapist calls very acute burnout. So we crafted a morning and an evening routine to allow me time to, one, lead up to a day, but also give myself time to rejuvenate and recharge. Because if I don't build in the time, I won't do it. If I don't intentionally carve out that time and say, okay, from 6:30 to 9:30, this is what my morning looks like. From 7 to 10, this is what my evening looks like. It won't happen. And so my therapist and I sat down and crafted it, and we check in about it routinely to make sure that it's happening.
Your therapist sounds great.
Yeah.
How long have you been in therapy? Is this something that has been a part of your life for a long time?
On and off since my teenage years, for sure. I've been consistently in therapy as an adult the last 5 years or so.
We get a lot of questions from listeners about how to find a good therapist. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that. Like, was your current therapist the first one who you met? Did you kind of, you know, test out some people? How did you vibe with them? What were your criteria for selecting a therapist?
I needed a therapist who I trusted and who I vibed with. That was top for me. I wanted to have a Black woman therapist because I'm a Black woman. I felt like we could have some cultural connection there, like things I didn't have to explain to her. But every Black woman doesn't get along. And so I got referred to a service. So I went through my insurance. I got referred to through a service called Sondermind. And then I could pick a therapist within that network, so I didn't have to get recertified every time. And so I kind of bounced around. I went around, I would say I tested out maybe 5 therapists. And I think what tends to happen is, if you get a therapist, like, you feel obligated to stay with that therapist. Like, I've met with them twice. I kind of like them. But what was important for me is to come out of therapy feeling like it was useful, and that it wasn't a waste of time, and that we focused on the things that I cared about, and that I wasn't being led into a place where I was either uncomfortable or didn't feel prepared for or didn't feel guided through. And so I would come out and reflect, like, do I like this person? Do I actually like this person? So I tested out maybe, I would say, 5 therapists before I landed on my current therapist. And some I stayed with in the beginning. I had one therapist I was with for a year, and then it just wasn't working out for me after mm-hmm. that. And then I tested another four and then found my current therapist.
I love that because I know, you know, when people are kind of, when you try to go to therapy because you're in crisis, I think it can be really hard if, you know, you find a therapist and they're not the right match and people kind of give up. And so I really like your approach to it. And I also think it's a good reminder that it's, you know, it's good to seek out therapy. Maybe, and actually I don't want to assume why you sought out therapy, but you know, to seek out therapy when you're not necessarily in crisis, I think is great. And something that, you know, I have not been always successful at doing. And, but I think it does offer a lot in terms of allowing you to kind of take your time and like find the right person. So yeah, I appreciate that. Yvette, let's switch gears and talk about your amazing book, which both of us just loved and, you know, just raised so many really important issues and questions and presented things in ways that I hadn't ever thought about. And, you know, you said something in your introduction that struck me as really profound. You said, "I hope my personal stories might light a pathway for other fat people to reclaim their bodies." And I was hoping that you could talk a little bit just about the process of writing this book and what kind of writing this book in general meant for you.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for the kind words about the book. I started writing this book about 5 years ago or so. Originally, it was a different book. And in the process of writing that book, I was diagnosed with heart failure. And so it became a completely different book. And I was mostly trying to journal through that experience of being diagnosed so early and figuring out mortality and thinking about what can my life look like right now? What can it look like in the future, depending on what happens on the journey? And I was journaling through that experience because I often say, I say all the time, I feel like an avatar. Like, I feel like I'm like floating above my life, like watching it happen to someone else. Like, I, for a long time, didn't feel connected to or in my body, really. It was like I was kind of just watching this happening and thinking, oh, is that happening to me? Like, I was talking about someone else and not myself. And then I realized when I got diagnosed, I couldn't do that. Like, I had to be very present in my body. Like, I needed to feel every ache and pain to figure out if medication was working or not, and like really, really be present. And so after a while, I was like, well, this, I can't hold on to this experience for myself. I think the statistic is like 1 in 2 Black people by under the age of 50 will develop some sort of heart condition at varying degrees. Like, mine is more intense, but you know, from a murmur to cardiomyopathy, like the runs the gamut, really. And I was like, well, this could help someone. And if it can help someone, then there's a story there, and it's a story I need to tell. And I knew that I didn't really want to write about myself. I had come through kind of like the personal essay complex of doing that through my early 20s, like build a career. And I didn't really want to do it. But I also knew that using a personal narrative to bring people in, it really is powerful. It allows you to connect with people on a human level. So it doesn't feel like, oh, this can't happen to me, but oh, this is happening to so many people, it can. And if it does, here's what I can do. And that's when I knew it could be a book.
I mean, you do that really effectively. I think you balance this, the kind of information side through the, with the personal narrative so beautifully. And I think that's why I know personally, I feel like I got so much out of reading. And you talk so much about the medical establishment and the way in which the fat phobia to this very day, to an article I read in the New York Times mere days ago, is just so rampant, in touches every aspect, from merely like going in for, as you mentioned, like the kind of common joke of, or common refrain of going in to get your sore throat checked. And a doctor will ask, you know, have you take a blood test for diabetes if you're a fat person? I mean, just, you know, it's insidious in all aspects of culture, but specifically in the medical space. And still so much. And, you know, we've talked about navigating the medical world in this way with the fat phobia. But I'm wondering kind of what you've taken away after writing about it so personally and going through your own kind of lifelong health experiences. Where do you kind of, I don't know, where do you think the change is going to happen and how?
Oh, I am unsure about the how.
Yeah.
Or if. This has served doctors for a long time. It has served the medical establishment for a long time. Like, dieting is a $1 billion business. Is that something people and systems want to divorce themselves from? And that part, I'm unsure. But I think where it could happen, like in an ideal world, is in the residency spaces and in the school space where doctors are being trained.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Because so much of what they're carrying around is this fat bias, but a lot of it is subconscious. And a lot of it is because that was the way that they were trained. They're trained into BMI. They're trained to treat obesity as an illness. They're trained to think about obesity as the cause of all of these other illnesses that happen afterward. If you're trained that way, of course, you're going to treat patients that way. So ideally, like in an ideal world, that is the place where it would happen. So by the time doctors are out and practicing, especially family doctors are out and practicing, they're not carrying that bias with them. I think it's going to take some overt unlearning and overt training about fat bias for that to happen. And then on top of that, like racial bias and gender bias and all of the things that are plaguing doctors, that they don't take women seriously when they're in pain, or they think that Black people can take pain at a higher degree than other ethnicities and races. All of that needs to happen at that level. So by the time they're interacting with patients one-on-one, they're not carrying that bias, or if they are, they're able to recognize it and check it.
I'm sorry, I'm looking down because I have your book on a iPad here. Oh, I just want to make sure you know that I'm not just like tuning out, but I'm trying to find the chapter that you wrote about COVID, because I don't think, I think this conversation is so necessary, and I haven't seen it happening a lot. And I'm so, so glad you write about the way in which BMI and fat phobia played out through all aspects of this pandemic, whether it's who gets on a ventilator or, quote, deserves a ventilator, to getting access to the vaccine. I mean, it's wild, and it's so pervasive, and it hasn't really even been a part of the discussion. And on, obviously, we're still in COVID. But what kind of first, like, was there a moment where you like first kind of zoned in on this happening as the pandemic kicked in and began? Do you think it's a conversation that is going to be happening more? I mean, I just had my own experience with the vaccine rollout because of my BMI. I qualified to get it early. And like, there were so many like crazy shitty things that were fat phobic in how we've dealt with COVID, and that are fat phobic, and that we haven't really talked about yet.
Yeah, I think it was such a chaotic time. COVID is still happening, but I remember like early 2020, even early 2021, it was chaos.
Yes.
It was so chaotic. And I remember watching those press conferences every day, like sitting down, because I was so concerned. My family was really concerned because my conditions impact the heart and the lungs. And thankfully, up until this point, I have not had COVID. I don't know how this is happening, but even like right now, I have not had COVID. And everyone in my family was so concerned. So we would sit down, and the world had pretty much slowed down at that point. A lot of things were closed. People were trying to figure out what was going to happen. So I was spending a lot of time with family in a way I hadn't in a very long time. And watching those news conferences and hearing Dr. Fauci, who I adore, lumping in obesity with cancer and saying that obesity could be the cause of developing severe COVID, and hearing that and having to rewind it And then looking around, like, am I the only person who's hearing this and thinking this is odd? And realizing that I was, because I wasn't, like, I'm sitting around people who aren't as well versed in fat phobia and fat liberation as I am. So I'm looking around at them, they're looking at me like, what's the big deal? And I think that has continued, honestly, of if being fat can cause you to get severe COVID, then why be fat? Without considering all of these other factors, such as, do you have a pre-existing condition? Do you live in a place that allows you to stay home? Or are you an essential worker on the front lines who may not have the correct PPE? Like, all of that leads to whether or not you get severe COVID, but to lump obesity in with, I mean, terminal illnesses, it was one of the wildest things I've ever seen. And I don't think, because of the chaos of that, and the chaos of it even now, of like the numbers are spiking and we just don't talk about it, we pretend like it's not happening, there really hasn't been space to have that conversation, because there are so many other things to concern ourselves with around the pandemic and the mismanagement of the pandemic. But I definitely think it's something, if we ever get to the other side, that we should think deeply about, of the lessons that we can learn from the ways in which fat people were treated, both during the pandemic and during the vaccine rollout.
Yes, I'm so, so glad you talk about it. I really hope it's a conversation that keeps going. Because it's almost, it's like you say with the chaos, it's, there's so much going on. It's like things register and then you're just like, oh, you know, on to the next thing. But I think as we reflect on the last few years, it needs to be a big part of the conversation.
I agree.
Yvette, I wanted to ask you about something that you write about that Kate and I have talked about on the podcast a bunch, which is the phrase, you look amazing, and just kind of generally the whole concept of commenting on people's bodies. And you write about it in the context of weight loss, and you write, you know, you lost weight because you were sick, and people started complimenting you. And you write, it's beyond time to undo our cultural assumption that weight loss is a triumph, which is like, whew, yes. Yeah. But I did want to kind of unpack this whole idea of people feeling like they have the right to comment on other people's bodies because they quote unquote look good, and how that is often correlated to weight loss. So could you kind of talk about your own experience and what you have, how you've, and you write about this in the book, but how you've kind of seen this manifested in the media and in popular culture?
Oh yeah. Those, I am forever haunted by those magazine covers that were like hot or not bodies. Oh, forever haunted, like standing in the grocery store aisle at the checkout counter, like, oh my, you're tearing these people. These are people, and you're tearing them apart and tearing their bodies apart, and like having paparazzi photos of them on the beach. They don't even know they're being photographed, and picking their bodies apart if they have a piece of cellulite. And the haunting of that, like, that has stayed with me. I was probably 12. It stayed with me for decades now. And I think a large part of that is because we treat fat people's bodies like they're a public spectacle. Like, that's the way that I felt. And when I was diagnosed, I went on a very, and I'm still on a very strict sodium restriction and liquid restriction. So I can have 2000 milligrams of sodium a day, no more. And now 82 ounces of any liquid, water, juice, whatever it is, soda, whatever it is. I can have 82 ounces a day and that's it. And because of that, you have to learn how to craft a diet that fits within those restrictions. It is a form of dieting, bar none. Yeah. It's a life-saving form of dieting. Like, it's designed to, it's not designed to lose weight. It's designed to keep fluid from pooling in your body, because salt builds fluid and fluid builds fluid. So it's designed to lower the amount of fluid in your body so your heart can, because when you have heart failure, your heart can't pump liquid. It can't pump fluid. So it's keeping the amount lowered and like flushing it out of your system so your heart can pump normally. But as a consequence of that, like that's what's actually happening. But as a consequence of that, my body dwindled and I got much smaller than I've ever been, honestly. And the response to that was like, wow, you look incredible. You've lost so much weight. I had someone who I know personally say, well, if that's what heart failure does to your body, I need to have heart failure.
Oh my God.
Like literally. And I was sitting there like, wow, like what is happening? Like we've known each other for years. But that is the experience that fat people who lose weight experience, because the assumption is that you intended to lose weight. Like you're assimilating into a system, you're intending to lose weight, and that is worthy of celebration. But you never know the reason why someone is losing weight. Like I think a lot about Adele. I've written extensively about Adele. Yeah, I wrote about Adele in the book. I've written extensively about Adele and about the ways in which people treated Adele's smaller body. And I love that she, in her interview with Oprah, said, I had to start working out because I was having panic attacks and it helped my nervous system after I was getting divorced, which is a traumatic thing. Like a divorce is like a death. And to go through a divorce when you have a young child, you have no idea what it does to someone's body or how they respond to it. But the response to Adele was like, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. If you have anxiety and you got divorced and as a result of that, you lost weight, then it was worth it. And to me, I don't think people intend to send that message. I tend to come from the place of people aren't inherently malicious. But if we're all indoctrinated in this same system, this fat phobic system that says that any weight loss is good weight loss, no matter how it's earned, like everything is earned. And if you lose weight, you earned it and you deserve to be celebrated for it. Then it doesn't allow us to think about the complexity of that and like the message that that's sending, not only to the person who's experiencing it, but to the person who's saying it, that they're envying your weight loss and wishing they can do it, even if that means you develop heart failure or you get divorced. It's like, it's the wildest thing to me. It's so wild. I still, like, even now can't really wrap my head around it, having written a book about it. Like, I still can't wrap my head around that, of why people think that's an acceptable thing to do.
As I was reading your book, I was thinking, oh, I guess all the Ozempic stuff happened too late for her book. But like, yikes. I mean, that whole phenomenon just to me speaks to like every issue that you write about in your book. I mean, the medical establishment, pop culture, the media, women, like it just went on and on. And I was like, oh my God, like here we are, 2022. And this is where we still are. Like it's depressing and overwhelming and like mind blowing. It might be too depressing for you to write about Ozempic, but like I would love to read your take on it. So, you know, if you feel called to do so, I would love to read that.
Oh, I just can't believe people are taking that and like the side effects of it. And then you gain all the weight back. Like it's temporary weight loss. You suffer to experience it and then you gain all the weight back.
Not only, and you pay, it's like $1,000 a month or something. Like, it's like
wild.
It's wild. It blows my mind.
But these are the lengths. It should. I mean, you know, these are the lengths that, that we go. And like I say myself, I include myself in the we of that. I mean, I'm not taking Ozempic, but I find it so hard to know, and I've done a lot of work in therapy and, you know, in dealing with my own internalized fat phobia and disordered eating and all that stuff, but I still feel caught in the net of it all. And I actually think you write about this, when it comes to dating, another fat person. And I thought you write about this so, so beautifully, and with such like wonderful self-reflection, because it's there in all of us, no matter what.
It exists. It exists. Yeah. I think about this. TLC had a 600-pound life marathon on Thanksgiving.
Oh my God.
Ran a marathon on Thanksgiving, and I was in front of the TV, like, reliving some of these moments. I think so often we think of fat people as a monolith, particularly as it relates to body positivity, of every fat person is in harmony with their body, and they're encouraging other fat people to be in harmony with their body, and there's no real room for complexity around that. And I really wanted to be honest and vulnerable about the ways in which we all internalize fat phobia. I'm not exempt. Like, when I say we, I include myself in the we. Like, I'm not exempt from having these thoughts, from living them out, from showing up in the world, still unlearning like everyone else. And so many other fat people are in that place. Like, 600-pound life has been on 10 seasons, 11 seasons. It's not all thin people watching this. To pretend as if that is the case, I think does all fat people a disservice. There's a reason why this show is leading Wednesday nights and why it has multiple spinoffs, and now there are different shows in the same vein. There's a reason that's happening, and it's not because no one is watching.
Yeah, it's because lots of people are, it still sells. It's still, I mean, and the way in which, you know, pop culture has been a part of perpetuating all this stuff for centuries. But, you know, in the last, I'm thinking just kind of in the last 20 or 30 years with like all the weight loss TV shows and Instagram. I mean, it's just still rampant.
Unfortunately, that is the truth.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time, and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters. And then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs. Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. And you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
All right, we are back.
I also really liked how you dissected the way that fat people are represented in popular culture. And, you know, you write, you say representation is not enough. And I really liked how you broke down a lot of these characters that I think were sort of held up as like good representation, like Natasha Rothwell's character on Insecure, for example. You know, you really, for me, complicated my view of her and her character. And I, you know, that scene where she gets fingered in the restaurant is like, was such an iconic scene. And you really changed how I now think about that scene, you know?
Yeah. Which is hard to do. That's a hard thing for me to do because I want to see more fat people on television.
Yeah.
I really, really do. I want Disney to have fat characters. I just don't want to have that character deal with body dysmorphia, which is what they have. Like, right. Oh, we have our first groundbreaking fat character, but that character is dealing with body dysmorphia. Not that fat people don't, but is that all that we have? And it's really difficult. Like, I love Insecure. I really enjoyed This Is Us. Like, I really enjoyed these shows. I love Shrill. Like, Shrill is one of my favorite shows ever. And outside of Shrill, these shows don't think of fat people outside of the realm of their weight. Like Kate's entire trajectory on This Is Us was related to her weight, from the way that she met her first husband to what happened when she wanted to get pregnant to the birth of that child and all the trauma that followed, all had a relationship to her weight. And not to say fat people don't have that experience, but that's not all that we experience. It's not just that. Like, it's not just comedic relief for a thin person. It's not just constantly overwhelmingly thinking about weight. It's not, we never have relationships. We're not intimate with anyone. That's not true. It's just realistically not true, but that seems to be all Hollywood is ready for, unfortunately.
So where does allyship kind of play into all of this? In terms of, I guess, I mean, you know, in terms of like straight sized folks, but also just culturally, allies to the fat people, like, is being a fat ally, not, is it a thing? Obviously it is, but what does that truly look like? And I guess I also want to ask your thoughts on like, what happens when we fuck up? Like, how do we take accountability, when we fuck up in this space in terms of fat allyship?
And we will.
Yeah.
That's the reality. Humans are complicated, and that's something to be expected. I think it's essential. I don't think any movement. So ultimately, the thing that I advocate for in this book is systemic changes in our world that allow fat people to live with dignity. It's really not about how we interact with each other individually. That's important too. It's really about how do we shift our systems and our world to be more accommodating of fat people and more equitable toward fat people. And in order for that to happen, straight-sized people have to join the lobbying and the organizing and the movement building around these issues, whether it's, you know, passing laws across the United States, like Michigan is the only law right now that prohibits employers from discriminating against someone for being fat. That should happen nationwide. And that requires everyone to say, oh, this is a problem, and lobby around it. Or the fact that you can go to an amusement park and there are no rides if you're over a certain size. And once you get to a certain size, like, your world is so small because no one accommodates for that. You need everyone. Like, it's not, if it's only fat people advocating for this, it's not going to make a difference. We need everyone, truly, to make these sorts of changes. But in terms of interpersonally, when people fuck up, which we all do, if we're an ally to any movement, we all fuck up. The best place to start is change behavior. How you interact with that particular person who you offended or something that you said that rubbed them the wrong way, that's between you and that person. But I always say the best apology is full on change behavior. It's unlearning. It's consciously being aware of the language that you're using, how you're interacting with fat people, what you're saying about them when they can see you and when they can't, which is why I loved including that that story in, I forget which essay it is, Jesus. But
it's
about
that's a lot.
But, but about the woman on the plane. And like seeing the guy's text messages making fun of her size and her confronting him about it. The best way in which he can ever atone for that is to change his behavior and ensure that never happens again. How she wants, if she's willing to forgive him, that's on her, right? Like that's fully on that person to make that choice. But the person who's doing the offending has to unlearn that behavior and change it.
Well, your book is I mean, so insightful. We are both encouraging everyone to go out and read it, obviously. But it's just it was a really fantastic and enjoyable read.
And also, may I just add, wonderful cover. I love your cover.
I know. Thanks. I had the same thought. It's a gorgeous cover.
Thank you so much. We went through so many artists to get that cover, but it was worth it. It was so worth it.
I hope you have that framed. It's beautiful.
I need it framed. I want to hang it in my office. Yeah.
Yes.
So this is just one final gear shift because we do always try to wrap up our interviews with an inquiry into a skincare practice. If you have one, what does it look like? If you have products that you recommend, and don't think I didn't notice when you mentioned that you said something earlier on about there was a whole skin thing. So that of course piqued my curiosity, but we'd love to know if you do have a skincare practice, what it looks like, and if there's any product that you can't live without that you want to share with our listeners.
I'm so excited about this. I've been looking forward to this the whole interview. Okay.
Yes. Enough about this beautiful book you wrote. On to skin.
I do have a skincare practice. I am a huge fan of the entire line of Peach and Lily. Huge fan. I use it in the morning. I use it in the evening. Okay. Huge fan. I'm a big fan of I usually do a moisturizer, a toner. Sometimes vitamin C, depending. Sometimes it depends on the time of year, but sometimes vitamin C. I typically do two moisturizers. My skin is very dry and I live in Denver, which means it's like supremely dry here. So I usually use two moisturizers and then sunscreen. Highly recommend always using sunscreen, even if you're a Black person, even if you have darker skin, always, always, always use sunscreen. And then depending on how my skin is feeling, I'm a big fan of using a cooling serum, particularly on my cheeks. Like my cheeks tend to get rosy. So I use a cooling serum before I put moisturizer on, but highly, highly recommend Peach and Lily everything. Their entire line is phenomenal.
I love their glass serum. Do you ever use that?
Oh, yes. Every night.
That's so good. Also, I feel like I need to, like, we just need to tell our listeners, because they're not going to be able to see you, that Yvette's skin is glowing. You are glowing.
Thank you. Thank you, just for what it's worth.
Yeah. Well, Yvette, it was so great to get to talk to you. As we have both said multiple times, we loved your book. And can you tell our listeners where they can find you, read your work, etc.?
Yes. You can find me across the internet at Free Black Girl. I know Twitter is twittering, but Free Black Girl, any platform, new and old, that's the best place to find me.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, Yvette was so, she's so great. Her book is so great. It just came out yesterday.
It's really great. And I think as we I know, like personally, you know, just continuing to kind of explore our relationship to our own bodies and other people's bodies, I'm so grateful that there are writers like Yvette out there, not just like exploring this topic, but also sharing the way in which their own stories are a part of it.
It's
just really, it's such a great read. So go get Weightless. We both really loved it.
Well, Kate, you last week said you wanted to walk, walk, walk.
I did. As I told you, I walked under the fat phobic diet signs of the cruise.
Gosh, yeah.
Listen, if anyone from the Royal Caribbean organization is listening and you want to know what boat I was on and you want to take those signs down, email the pod. I highly recommend you remove them.
Oh, yeah.
Now, do we think anyone from Royal Caribbean has ever heard of this podcast? Doubtful. But you never know. Hey.
You never know.
Crazier things have happened. You know, this week when I filled out this document, my intention was to kind of start my 5K walk training. But I didn't do that this week because I'm not feeling well and I didn't want to push my body to do anything that wasn't going to serve it. What I have been doing is practicing 30 minutes of yoga every morning. And I'm going to actually do that when we finish recording. And
okay,
that is, I am having kind of like a, not a revelation, but like 30 minutes of very slow flow, very basic yoga classes. My back, the back pain and the tightness that I've been experiencing in my body, like it's already so much better. And I just was like reminded of like, oh God, this simple, short movements really make such an impact. You know, I'm not doing anything strenuous.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it to like bulk up. I'm just doing it to really like stretch, and it has felt amazing. So I'm going to try to keep that up next week. That's my intention.
You know, I just remember one of our very first conversations with a guest, with Jasmine Guillory, and she had been doing yoga every day at that point. For, I think she had just finished a year, maybe.
I think it was like 60 days. And it was early on in her thousands of days
really
of yoga.
It was really early. But she was already like, I feel so much better. And then I think when we interviewed her again, she had seen like some real changes just in how she felt in her body. And now she's been doing it for like 6 years or something. I mean, it's amazing. And I wish I did that, in all honesty. Nothing is holding me back from doing it, to be clear, except myself. Well, Kate, last week I said I did not want to get stressed out about not being as good at tennis as some of the people I was playing with.
Yes. And then you all like went to coffee.
We didn't go to coffee, but we did play afterwards. And I went to a live ball thing the other day, and sometimes the groups are, there's more people just sort of at my level, and then there's a few really good ones. And then the one I went to the other day, most of the people were very good, like noticeably better than me. And I was like, oh fuck. But you know, I did okay. I made it to the champion side a few times.
What? Like, okay. I don't know what that means, but yes. Yeah. Okay.
They're just, you know, I was trying, and there were a couple times where I said to someone like, oh, you know, trying to keep up with you guys or something. And she was like, you're doing great. And I was like, okay. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's interesting. This week, I got to figure out this half marathon thing.
Okay. That's a great intention. Figure out the half marathon thing.
Like, I gotta figure out, because if I'm gonna do it, I need to really, like, really figure out my training and you know,
and your plane tickets.
So, and my plane tickets. Oh God, what have I done? Okay, Kate, this was such a delight. Thank you for coming with me on this journey.
Of course. I will run alongside you via a podcast anytime.
Oh, thank you so much. All right. Everyone, this podcast is hosted and produced by me, Dori Shafrir, and Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sam Junio. Sammy Reed is our project manager. Our network partner is Acast. Talk to you all again soon. Bye.
Bye.